Remaker's Mark For Shame number 5, The Maltese Falcon. Hello everyone and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in our fifth For Shame episode where we'll be discussing The Maltese Falcon. With me as always are my friends Andy Wicks, Jeremy Nilsson, Lee Hardslap, and Mark Josting. So, here we are discussing The Maltese Falcon, and this was Mark's choice. So Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit of your background with the film, if you've seen it, or if not, and then why you chose that for this pick.
I have not seen this film. And I really know very little about it. I knew that it was a film noir sort of thing, or at least I had that impression. And I now know that it stars Humphrey Bogart. I didn't before. So really, I have next to no history with this film. Yeah, the only thing that I have that could be kind of history with it was actually an extreme skiing film that parodied the name. It was called The Maltese Flamingo.
Wow. So one of those old Warren Miller jobs?
Yep, kind of? It was a Warren Miller film.
Yes! Yep. I love it.
So really, it had nothing to do with this, with the Maltese Falcon. But yeah.
But notable.
That's what I got.
But totally awesome. Tubular.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of slow motion helicopter footage, just like in the real movie. You know, it's funny, looking back, like, we've done two film noir movies in this. We've done, well, in Remaker's Mark, I should say, Casablanca and this one now with Bogart. But, like, it seems like in the 30s and 40s, was every movie either an epic or a film noir film? Like, it doesn't seem like there's any just, like, just kind of normal goings on.
It was a simpler time.
Everything had that, everything had that tinge. It was either a big, giant, epic movie or a crimey film noir-y.
They only had about four emotions.
There wasn't a lot of Caddyshacks.
It's true. There weren't too many Caddyshacks back then. Yeah. Maybe it's just my lack of experience or lack of film watching knowledge from the 30s. But it's weird. How about the rest of you guys? What history do you have with it? Has anybody seen it? No, I don't think so, right?
I've only seen bits and pieces here and there. But I don't believe I watched it from start to finish.
Wasn't there a spoof of this on Sesame Street? For some reason, I feel like there
was. Yeah, because Sam Spade is Humphrey Bogart's character, and I think Sesame Street has like a Sam Slade or something like that.
Was it also like the Guy Smiley kind of guy?
Maybe.
I thought Guy Smiley was more of a...
Wait, no, Guy Smiley was the piano player, wasn't he?
No, Guy Smiley was the game show host, but I feel like that trope was also like their Sam Spade kind of guy for this.
Wait, wasn't there a character that had like the trench coat and the hat and he'd say, I'm looking for an Kermit. N.
Yeah.
Right.
Looking for the man in the tan van.
Oh, yeah.
The golden
Awesome.
That was like...
I'll see if...
Link that,
please. See if
please.
We can find that.
Oh,
yeah.
Please do.
Well, I'm going to need your help to find it because just Sesame Street character in a trench coat.
Do a search for the golden Anne. The golden A-N. You'll find it.
All right. Deal. It's on. I have not seen this. The extent of my knowledge is that I knew that Humphrey Bogart is in it, and it's in black and white, and it's film noir. That's it. I got nothing else. So, and it involves a falcon, or falcon, depending on your regional dialect.
Falcon.
Falcon.
Falcon. Sparrow?
Falcon.
Put Millennium in front
Millennium
of that.
Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
It all becomes clear when you put Millennium in front of things.
Yes.
Yes. Nice. All right. Well, I think that's about it with our history here. I'm intrigued to see it. I expect lots of film noir, probably cliches and tropes.
Guns, dames, and hats.
Yep. Guns,
and
dames,
cigarettes.
And hats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gross. Yeah. All right. So now, again, we're going to throw some jaunty music in here. And when we come back after said jaunty music, we will have seen the movie and we will discuss it further. So, on to the show.
Satisfy the kiddies with a bag of crisp, crunchy popcorn. And don't forget to get an extra bag or two to take to the car to munch on during the show. You will also want to take a supply of ice-cold soft drinks or delicious, flavorful coffee to keep you refreshed throughout the next show. Make the evening complete by getting a tasty treat for yourself and every member of your party. Make your visit to our theater a pleasant occasion to be remembered. We'll be richly rewarded with the thought that we have pleased you.
And we're back. So now we have all seen The Maltese Falcon. And now listen here, C. We're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about it good. And that's just how it's going to go. This, I think, just based on some notes that we made here, might be the least popular or the least well-received of the For Shame movies that we've done so far.
Most confusing, sure.
Definitely most confusing, mm-hmm. Yep. So we'll wait until the end for our ratings. So we'll talk about it a little bit. We'll do the ratings at the end here. You know, this is first and foremost a film noir film from the School of Redundancy School. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that because that's a big part of what either makes or breaks this movie. If you are cool with film noir films, again, School of Redundancy School, then I think you're going to love it. If you're not cool, you're going to have a really hard time with it. I tend to really like film noirs. I like the darkness. I like the way that they're lit. I like some of the tropes of it, but I had a really hard time with this one in particular. It's not as though it wasn't a true noir or even a good noir necessarily. It just didn't quite get where I wanted it to get from a noir perspective, I guess. I don't know. I don't quite know what to think about it. Mark, you had a great point, which is in the notes here, you said, is there no decent human in this film? Do you want to talk a little bit about that, maybe even from a noir perspective a bit?
Yeah, that I walked into this movie expecting Sam Spade to be the good guy. And I kept hoping for it, I don't know, maybe a half hour through it. And I eventually just gave up and just kind of wanted to see what happened. But every character that was introduced, I kept thinking, oh, maybe this person is innocent. Maybe this person is our beacon of humanity. Nope. There was no such thing.
I think the only decent person that I could pick out of this one was Effie.
I thought about that.
Secretary?
Yeah, secretary. Yeah. And even she's not really... I mean, she definitely bends the laws and rules. You know,
she keeps secrets well.
She keeps secrets well, good or bad. But she's very loyal.
It seems like that's her only virtue, though, loyalty to a bad person.
She's maybe the least of the worst.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think a noir trope is that you never know who's good and who's bad, and it vacillates. And I think this, it's like two times something is funny, four times something is maybe either less funny or more funny, and 10 times is either hilarious or terrible. And this, I feel like there were so many twists and so many turns that I didn't trust anybody, and not in a way that's like, ooh, this is exciting. You know, it's like, I don't get this. Everybody's just doing their thing. And, you know, there's lots of, backstabbing, you know, quite literally. I just had a really, really hard time reconciling that. And it just didn't add to my enjoyment of the film.
I wasn't so much disappointed in the lack of a hero or anything like that, because I guess I was expecting, similar to what you were saying, Kyle, like in a noir, that this is just how things are. But it was just so convoluted and confusing to me.
Yeah, yeah. To figure out to follow
who was on whose side and who was betraying whom, and why was the bird led? Things like that. Yeah. It was, and why? Yeah. There's enough plot jumps. I will admit, I watched this over two separate nights that were not consecutive. So there was a time gap in how I watched it, but I overlapped, you know, from where I left off the first night. I picked up probably a good 15 minutes earlier in the film. So I felt like I got a decent kind of refresher as to what was going on. And I was still lost.
Go ahead, Lee.
I was just going to say, I was really kind of annoyed when I would see somebody pull a gun on somebody and then 60 seconds later be laughing about it. They'd both be laughing about it.
I'm like,
or just give the gun right back.
Yeah.
It's like, this makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
It's like, once you've been bested, you can't use the gun anymore.
Yeah.
like that's a gangster rule from back then. It's like, well, if someone's stolen your gun, then it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah. There are so many things like that in this film, and where disarmaments and slaps and kisses and backstabs and are just handed out willy-nilly and for no purpose.
It's true. Good use of willy-nilly, too. I like that a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to come back in a little bit to some of the other noir things, but let's talk a little bit more about the disjointed plot. I just made a point in our notes here that I'm not the smartest cat in the world, but like, modern movies tend to be very you know, or much more complex than movies were back in the day, right? So there was no, as far as I know, I'm happy to be proven wrong. If you have a movie that I should see that I have not, that proves me wrong on this, please send it my way. But like, there was no Memento back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just a total linear, you know, mind job, just really hard to follow. And I don't feel like I get Memento 100%, or something like Mulholland Drive, same thing there, open for interpretation, or something that's maybe more akin to more straight noir, like Usual Suspects or Brick. Like, they're not easy to understand. But to me, those are significantly easier to understand than the noirs that I've seen from back in the day, and especially this one. Do you guys get that sensation as well, or am I the only one on that?
I totally agree. I think there have been so many more modern films that are equally as complex, as convoluted, as I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but they seek to keep you off balance, and are really just much more enjoyable films that they really, you know, leave you with something, edify you, and make you feel like the experience was rewarding. I didn't feel rewarded by this one. I just felt like it was kind of like a maze, except I didn't feel any accomplishment. That it just it just had a lot of twists and turns. And
yep.
I think the problem is that there was a lack of any escalation, any rising action. The only notable escalation in the temperature of the film was when they actually find the bird. And at that moment, I had a very strong reaction because I couldn't remember why they had it. Like, who?
That's a great point. At that point, you're like,
the bird. And
I was confused too as to why the ship was on fire, who this captain was, and how it all came to be that they suddenly possessed this bird that had been on the loose for hundreds of years.
Yeah, it just happens to fall into Bogey's lap. Is it because he's Bogey?
Right. And I like that, and I don't know if this is actually the line, but the guy, so the person who brings it to their door had been stabbed, shot, I don't remember which. I don't know if his actual words are, it's the bird.
I think he says it's the bird.
Falcon, but it's pretty much that. It's like, it's something like that. I was like, does the movie really need to like spell it out? Like this giant thud that just hits the floor, the titular thing of the movie, like, you know, they have to say it's the bird. Like the only thing would have been better / worse is if he turned to the screen, like total fourth wall break, and went, it's the bird.
Like puts one hand up to the side of his mouth.
Psst. Viewers, it's the bird.
I would love it if it turns out that he was the delivery guy for KFC.
It's the bird you ordered. Like, or flips the screen off.
Extra crispy.
It's a turkey. Yeah. I thought it was odd that, you know, the Falcon, to me, I thought it was going to be kind of a MacGuffin. You know, I expected it to not pay off. And I didn't really care if it did or didn't, but I was sort of expecting it to just sort of linger out there. And I don't know if I was disappointed, but I wasn't super happy that they came back to it. You know, I think that it could have been a stronger film had it just sort of stayed out there. I guess in the long run it did because, spoiler alert, I guess we don't need to because this is a million years old, but it's not. So the Falcon that they get is not the actual Maltese Falcon. It's a lead one. So the journey just goes on, which, by the way, the turn from figuring out that it is not this thing to let's keep going on our mission, like that 4 second, that 4 second turn that the big guy took, that was weird.
Yeah. You know, it's like he figured out that the bird is fake, and he just basically says, oh, well, want to keep looking?
Yeah. Let's go to Turkey.
I think in that moment right there,
strange.
I had, as a drunkard would say, a moment of clarity where it was like he had almost a mental snap where he had to force himself to get over the disappointment of losing the bird to kind of going back to relying on the thrill of the chase of the bird. He said he's been chasing this thing for, 17 years, like that. And so he had to almost...
Yep.
Revert to that psychological state to say, all right, this is just, you know, one more turn of the game and the game continues. And now we're off to Istanbul or Budapest. In my mind, that's how I interpreted what he was thinking.
I bet his mantle has like 100 fake Maltese Falcons on it. He was just so used to it. Nope. Oh, this one's made of lead. Nope. Oh, I got, this one's like pine.
This is just a pigeon.
How did we even think that this was the role?
That one's not even a bird. It's a pig. Oh, that's my piggy bank.
That's when that reveal happens, and that little weaselly guy, I forget his name.
Cairo.
When he throws that hissy fit, I started laughing. What a winner. This is hilarious.
Yeah. We'll come back to that performance because I want to touch on that a little bit, but I agree completely. Yeah. So let's bounce back to the noir side of things a little bit here. You know, there were cliches all over the place. And again, with film noir, you know, you either love it or you hate it based on its noirness, noirosity, if you will. But part of that is that there's all kinds of cliched dialogue. And we talked about, you know, in our Goldfinger episode about how, like, that was the origin of a lot of spy cliches. So it was weird sort of taking that into account. You know, you felt really weird that the cliches were happening, but then you had to think, like, this is the origin of it. I don't think that Maltese Falcon is necessarily the origin of a lot of that, although I think maybe the Dashiell Hammett character is, right? So that's a series of books that turned into movies, I think, right? Am I remembering that correctly? Anybody know the history of that? Hammett books? I think so. It's like a really very beloved, hard-boiled detective novel series, I think. Boy, I hope I'm right. If not, I'm an idiot. Pretty
Hardy
sure
Boys.
It is.
Hardy Boys.
Either way, it's totally the Hardy Boys. Encyclopedia Brown. Oh, crap. Now I forgot where I was going. What was I talking about?
Origin of the noir tropes.
Oh, yeah. So
Dashiell Hammett.
Thank you. So, you know, there's a lot of those present in this movie, especially between men and women. We talked a little bit about the secretary. Like, some of the names that Humphrey Bogart came up with for his secretary were quite creative, though quite insensitive and offensive at the same time. What did you guys notice that as well? Did that rub you the wrong way, the way that it rubbed me the wrong way?
Mm-hmm.
And O'Shaughnessy as well.
Yeah, especially the way that they addressed Miss O'Shaughnessy. I think particularly in the final scenes where he asked her to go make coffee for everybody.
Yeah. Anybody else have an issue with that?
Hey, she made good coffee.
Yeah, apparently.
I don't know.
Yeah. I didn't buy them falling in love. I couldn't track the time frame of this. It felt like 2 days, maybe.
Yeah,
and a
very
half.
Quick.
And it didn't seem like they had a history before. He didn't know her, right? He didn't recognize her when he came in the office. So in the span of a day and a half, admittedly, very dramatic days, very intense, but like they're talking about loving each other and spending the rest of their lives together, though not, you know, it was just really odd. And again, I think that's part of the tropes, but man, did it feel weird.
Yeah. Didn't buy that one.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
There was almost every relationship in this movie I didn't buy. Almost every one of them. That one in particular, the relationship between Spade and Archer's wife, which seemed interesting at first and then just in the way.
Yeah.
And then the relationship between Gutman and Wilmer seemed odd.
Yep.
The Wilmer character itself was very odd to me. The fact that he seemed like he's always on the edge of a mental breakdown seemed like that could have been much more interesting and never was made interesting. And then when he found out that he was going to essentially be the scapegoat and he just kind of mopes a little bit, I didn't buy that. Based on his previous behavior, I figured he would probably try to steal every gun and shoot everyone in there and run. But instead he just kind of pouts. There's a lot of not believable things about the interpersonal relationships in this film.
Yeah. So here is the degree to which male-female relationships are jacked up in this film. When his dead partner's wife comes in and greets him after finding out that her husband, his partner, is dead, he full-on mouth kisses her, right? But I was like, I don't know that means that they're together. I think it does. Like, it could just be that, like, Sam Spade just mouth kisses every lady that comes in his office. Like, it seemed like a reasonable thing to believe.
I think both are true.
You know, they eventually followed it up, but man, I was like, okay, I think that was a thing, but I'm not positive.
It was a very short-lived custom in the early 40s.
Yeah. Yep, full hug, mouth kiss. I mean, it wasn't like an extended mouth kiss, but it was like, it was a legit mouth kiss. Man, yeah, that was something else. Well, speaking of, mouth kisses. No, let's pull back from mouth kisses.
No, I think we should address it.
Let's address it. They're great.
Let's get right in there.
let's get right in there, please. Let's talk about the performances a little bit. First and foremost, or most in the star making side of things, is Humphrey Bogart. We've watched Casablanca and did a standard Remakers Mark episode of that, and I rather enjoyed that overall. I enjoyed this movie less, but I think I'm starting to come around on Bogart a little bit. I guess I didn't really dislike him, but it's just, I mean, there's no one that could be him other than him, and so I'm trying to decide if I love that or if it's totally limited, or, you know, is he just the equivalent of whatever massive action star is right now, you know, who doesn't do anything other than action movies, you know, where he just did noirs. I don't know what else
he's the
he
Clooney.
Did back then.
He's the Clooney.
Yeah, but Clooney can do, you know, he can do Gravity. He can do...
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Oh my gosh, I can't think of the name of the movie.
Please, I just can't figure out... I and not that I'm immensely well-versed in movies that came out alongside of these in that time period, but I can't figure out what the draw is on him.
Right. Not super handsome, but not ugly. Kind of weird. A very strong presence. I'll give him that. Yeah. You know, like he commands the screen. I don't like the way he commands. Yeah. I don't know.
I wonder if it's because of his presence, which coming out of the silent film era, you needed more of a physical presence and you needed a very noteworthy and expressive face, which his is quite unique. I don't know. Maybe that's it.
I would agree with that.
He spits that dialogue well.
Well, I was just going to say, he feels like he's about to drool all the time. Everybody notice that? Like he has a very wet speech pattern.
Uh-huh. Yep. And one
wet
he
does. Speech
one
pattern.
Side of the mouth moves and one kind of doesn't. Yeah, yeah.
He just has a lot of saliva. It's weird.
It is a little bit weird.
Yeah, I feel like the draw on Bogey is kind of like the draw on James Bond. Just that, you know, like we've said, strong presence, especially when he's playing somebody like Sam Spade, that it just feels like he's always in control, he's uber confident, and nothing wrong is ever going to happen to him. And if something does, it's no big deal. He just gives the gun right back, you know?
Yeah. Yep, agreed. Other performances, any thoughts? The one that comes to mind, and we've touched on a little bit here, is Joel Cairo, which was Peter Lorre, who was in Casablanca as well. And man, that was a weird character. I don't even know who he was supposed to be. I don't know what nationality he was, but geez, that was weird.
It was very strange.
I felt like he was creepy, but he wasn't trying to be creepy.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Or he was trying to be creepy and doing a terrible job of it. I think like when he was trying to be intimidating, he like starts creepy and then totally pulls back and then is just sort of meek. Yeah, really weird.
He was the petulant child of the story.
Yeah. Yep.
It always creeped me out how he could make his hairline shift forward and backward a solid inch.
Yeah.
I was interested to find out how Peter Lorre, Humphrey Bogart, and the man who played Gutman.
Oh. I have it. It's Sydney Greenstreet.
Thank you. The three of them, a year later, worked together in Casablanca. I was wondering if the directors were the same, but they're not. I didn't see any other of the ensemble that were also there, but I just thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. That they all kind of play iterations of the same characters in those two films.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, I think Peter Lorre is a little bit typecast in what he can play.
Yeah, yeah.
But in a sense, they all kind of are. They all play, Sydney Greenstreet plays big, bombastic, kind of weird characters. Peter Lorre plays Peter Lorre characters, and Bogey plays Bogey characters.
Yeah, they didn't go too much outside their comfort zone in terms of casting. Yeah, yeah, indeed. And then Mary Astor, I thought was fine. She's the female lead.
Bugged me.
I don't know.
She seemed like she was a relic of the silent film era. She acted as if this was a silent film, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. She didn't bug me as much, but I think that's a really good analysis of that. Yeah.
And I think and Mrs. Archer was the same way. The woman who I liked the most was Effie.
Yeah.
everything that those other two female actresses did was so over the top, and everything was so overacted, and it didn't call for it, at least not all the time. And that got very old with me very quickly.
Yeah. At least she looked like she was having fun. Like the actress that played Effie looked like she was having a good time.
Oh yeah. A blast.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, before we go on to our ratings, anything else that you guys want to touch on? Anything else you want to add?
My one note was that Falcon was ugly.
Yeah. What a letdown. Yeah.
What a stupid...
I mean, it's not like I expected
it wasn't the real thing.
Right.
But fair. I would much rather, like, and we talked about this earlier, I'd much rather go like Usual Suspects didn't really do it, but the suitcase, the glowing suitcase from Pulp Fiction, like go that route with it, or just make it a complete mystery. And there was no need for that. Besides to I don't know, play off a sequel or something because it was fake, but it was much more interesting as this thing. And then once you saw it, you're like, this, they were looking for this.
Yeah. It was a pretty bad prop.
And that whole scene was so weird because he was like jabbing at it with his little pocket knife. And right. then it cut to his face and it's just like stone face.
Well, I thought he
and
was
then back
like
to him and he's like rigorously stabbing it.
Yeah.
It was poor editing.
I thought
that's acting, Jer. Acting.
I thought he was scraping off the enamel. Like I thought he wanted to do that. Like he was scraping off the enamel to get to
the impression that I got
below it. But no, he was just stabbing it.
I think he was trying to get the enamel off.
I think I alone probably read it how the filmmakers intended, and that was that he cut into it a few times and realized that it actually was a fake, and he just kept going out of denial, and so basically he was having a breakdown.
I read it as he was cutting off pieces to share the big giant chocolate falcon with everyone in the room.
It did look like chocolate.
You want some? You want some of this? You want a wing? Wings are free.
Nice. All right. Well, let's wrap up here. Let's do our ratings. Let's see here. I'll tell you what. Mark, why don't you pick the rating scale, and why don't you go first with your rating?
I like when we each do our own unit of measurement.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Go for it. So you just go first.
All right. I'm going to give it 5 out of 10 slipped Mickeys. I think there were a lot of strong aspects of this film, but ultimately it was not a well-written story.
Jer, how about you? No. Let's go alphabetically because I know how to do that. Lee, what was your rating and what was your rating scale?
I'm going to give it 3 out of 10 cigarettes.
All right. Hand rolled cigarettes.
Yeah, there we go.
There you go. I like it.
Cool. It wasn't my favorite. I don't think I'll watch it again.
Yeah.
I would rather, if I'm going to watch film noir, I'm going to watch better film noir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Real quick.
Makes me want to watch Double Indemnity. Mm. I got to say that.
Yeah. Was it weird seeing Humphrey Bogart stick his tongue out so much with all those hand-rolled cigarettes?
Oh, yeah. It was kind
of
weird.
I saw a lot of Bogey's tongue.
Yeah, that's true. He did roll a lot of cigarettes.
So did Mrs. Archer. Hey!
Hey-o.
Hey-o. Mouth kiss. Once again, going back to the mouth kiss. My rating will be 6 out of 10 stolen guns. I didn't love it. I would maybe revisit again just to see if it was something that I missed, but it mostly just makes me want to watch better film noir. So that's good. I'll give it that. Jer, how about you? What is your rating?
I give it 5 out of 10 dames with hats.
Nice.
Ooh, nice.
And the whole time I was watching it and reading about it, all I could think of was, I wish we were watching Double Indemnity.
Yeah. Yep. That's so good.
And
I think I might pick that for my next one.
Interestingly enough, Double Indemnity is ranked about 12 steps below this one in the AFI.
That's no good. I don't
Although
agree with that.
Almost every list that I looked at ranking film noir films ranked Double Indemnity as either 1 or 2, and some of them didn't even put Maltese Falcon on the list. So
interesting. Yeah, I would say deservingly so. Andy, how about you? What is your rating?
I'm going to give this one 4 out of 10 slipped Mickeys.
Nice. Borrowing the slipped Mickey scale.
Is that a thing?
That's a thing.
Did someone else use that?
Yeah.
Mark
did.
And, you know, it's a good one. I'm going to use it.
All right. Good. Good. Happy you're paying attention.
I love Spaceballs.
4 out of 10 Spaceballs.
Nice. I like it. All right. Well, thanks, gents. That was good. If you'd like to find out more information, actually, before I do that, let me just say, I think this wraps up the first of our For Shame series. And I really like this. I saw some movies that I haven't seen. I thought it was really good. We're going to take a little break from this just so we mix up some of our movies a little bit. Might do some special episodes. So look forward to that. But I think we'll come back to this. I think this is a good exercise. I enjoy seeing this and I enjoy discussing it with you guys. So we'll come back to it. But we're going to take a little pause from it for now. So until then, no, I'm a terrible transitioner. If you would like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, you can do so at mathishard.net. There you can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes where we put links for actors, actresses, movies, and links discussed here. You can follow us on both Facebook and Twitter at username mathishardnet, so hit us up there and provide feedback about what you liked or didn't like about Maltese Falcon or any other movie or any show that we do here. So, gents, until the next time that we hang out, may the force be with you, you say.
And also with you.
And also with you.
We were so confused.
Sorry. Flipped you for real.